So each month we try to have a theme. And so this month, and also in March, the theme is the five faculties. And I think last week Georgia played a recording from Matthew Brandsilver, a Dharma teacher, on the first of those five, faith. And so today I want to give an overview of all of them so that you kind of get a sense of what they are and how they interconnect. And so in Pali, the language in which some of the Buddhist scriptures were written down in, the five faculties are called Indriya, so the five Indriya. And so we all kind of have them already in our practice, but they might not have fully developed. Usually they actually are fully developed when we attain full awakening. And then they are called powers. So the five powers, and they become powers. And they become unshakable forces that can control any opposite forces. And so the five are, the first is faith, and energy, and mindfulness, then concentration, and then wisdom. And so when we meditate, we naturally develop these five faculties. And some of them we might be able to influence somewhat actively by intention or through practice, but most we kind of develop naturally when we practice, and they can develop in conjunction with each other. Like if we develop one, the other ones get stronger. And so the first one is faith, and it's sometimes also translated as trust or confidence. The Pali word is sadha. And so faith might not resonate with everyone, especially people from certain religious backgrounds, and faith might seem like kind of associated with this blind faith that you have to believe in something, but that's not what this is about. This is more the type of faith that is about trust and confidence in the practice and in ourselves. Though in the suttas, the Buddha actually mentions sadha, or faith, as this faith or this trust in the Buddha's awakening. And so that's kind of what the background in the suttas is, in the discourses of the Buddha. And it's not that the Buddha was saying like, oh, look at me, I'm so amazing, have faith in me. It was more that he was pointing to that we all have this potential to awaken and to become free from suffering. And so he tried with this example to inspire us. And so that's more about this inspiration, so that we feel inspired to practice and we feel this trust and confidence, like, oh, if the Buddha can do it, I can do it. He was a normal human being just like us. So that's what that aspect is about. And so we can see it in that way, feel this inspiration from the Buddha. And we can also see faith and trust and confidence as something that we can have in our own ability to practice, in our own, in ourselves, trust and confidence in ourselves. And then there's also the trust and confidence in the Dhamma, so in the teachings. So, like we've heard today that, you know, if we practice, then sometimes these challenging situations that become easier to deal with in our daily lives. Or if we practice, we see more clearly what is actually happening and these certain conditionings and patterns that we all have, they become more clear, so we can make different choices that are maybe more wholesome. And I can see how to deal with unwholesomeness and how to generate or cultivate more wholesomeness in our lives. And so in these ways, we can see how trust and confidence gets built by our practice, through doing the practice and through seeing the effects of the practice. And then sometimes in those periods where the faith or the confidence is not so strong, we can maybe reflect on periods where we did feel that the confidence was strong, and like, oh wait, back then, actually, the practice was really working, and I really gained a lot of insights. And so you can reflect on that and to rekindle your confidence a little bit. The teacher Spring Washam, with a fierce heart, and the practice of faith and trust, you discover that life isn't happening to you, it's happening for you. And so this quality of the confidence or trust or faith is something that sets us in motion. It's kind of generating energy, which is the next spiritual power or faculty. And so we can really use this trust and confidence to generate this energy to practice. And this this energy is also sometimes translated as effort or determination or steadfastness. And so, of course, we need a certain degree of energy to meditate, to walk this path. And it's not so much only like physical energy, like, you know, being able to stay awake, but it's also mental energy. Because sometimes we get in this rut or this dullness of mind, and then the energy feels so low that it's really hard to meditate. And so there's this balance needed. So that we have enough energy. Like, the energy could also be too much, and then we feel agitated or restless. So energy, this balance of energy is very important in our practice. Not having too much and not having not enough. And so this is kind of something we can try out for ourselves. If there's too much energy and there's restlessness is there, we can see if we can kind of keep the body still. Still body can help us to for the mind also to become still. Sometimes it seems impossible though. Sometimes the body just needs to move. If there's not enough energy, then we could try a different posture. We could try to stand up. Pull our earlobes, you know, things like that. I have actually a talk about both restlessness and about sloth and torpor, which is, which are the Buddhist words for dullness and sleepiness. They're on the website. It's part of the five hindrances. And so if we have confidence that this practice is relevant, then we also generate energy. And then the third of the faculties is mindfulness. And this is kind of the hub of those other ones. So we have mindfulness in the middle, and then that balances all the other ones. So mindfulness balances one spoke of energy and the other one of faith and the other one of concentration and wisdom. And so mindfulness is kind of in the middle, supporting all of them, balancing out all the other ones. And so it's a very important one, kind of like really on the basis of the other ones. And so we've just practiced an hour of mindfulness meditation, so you're pretty aware of what mindfulness is. It's kind of this being in the present with whatever arises, and kind of this clarity of mind that we know what is happening. So, and the interesting thing is that mindfulness itself doesn't really judge anything. Mindfulness itself is kind of neutrally observing what's happening. It can observe judgments, can observe judgment happening, but it doesn't judge itself. So Mindfulness is just aware of whatever arises, whether it's judgments or aversion or cravings or peace or kindness. It's just there for whatever there is in our bodies, in our minds. And then when mindfulness becomes stronger and more continuous with fewer interruptions, then at some point concentration gets developed, which is the fourth of the five faculties. And so concentration, a concentrated mind is very kind of focused and stable and present, kind of more, how do you say that, like closed into something. Like mindfulness is more broad for everything, and then with concentration it kind of gets focused on a narrower object, for example. Although concentration can also develop while doing more of the broad mindfulness, because then it's kind of this moment-to-moment concentration, as it's called. So we're concentrated because we're aware of moment-to-moment of whatever it is that arises. And so this is a very wholesome state of being, this focusedness, this stability of the mind and the body. And we can do specific concentration exercises to get there. Do like only breath meditation, or the walking meditation is, for example, a concentration exercise, the way we did it today. Or the loving kindness or compassion meditations that which you might be familiar with. And so then the last faculty is wisdom. And so wisdom is what helps us to see with clarity what is truly here. It helps us to see what is wholesome and what is unwholesome in our lives. It's a very important function of mindfulness, wisdom. And wisdom helps us to get freer and freer from reactivity, from stress, from suffering. And so because wisdom can kind of see what leads to suffering and what leads away from suffering. And so it kind of guides us out of this maze of all these desires and resistances and cravings and aversions and delusion that we have. And so it takes time to develop wisdom. It's not something that we can force or make happen. My teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, a Burmese monk, he talks about wisdom as an aspect of the mind. Just like we have other aspects of the mind, like kindness or compassion or anger. And when we're practicing, when we're just doing our mindfulness practice, every time we have a moment of mindfulness, we're collecting data points. That's what he says. And so we have all these data points, and then in the background, this wisdom aspect is learning from these data points. It's not something we can actively do. What helps with this collection or with this gaining of wisdom is to have the intention to learn and grow from it, and to let wisdom learn and grow from it. And so what we can do is basically put in place the conditions for wisdom to arise, which is just our basic mindfulness practice to start to see what's actually happening in the body and the mind, especially also our reactive patterns and other conditioning and patterns that might not be so helpful, and how we can, but what kind of things are not working not so well for us, and what is actually working well for us, to see all those little things in our lives. And it could be all sorts of things. I may have used this example before, but early on in my practice, I was very aversive towards cleaning and would always put it off. And I started to see that. I started to see the aversion and how painful it actually was, how unpleasant it was to have this aversion. And then, like, I would always put it off, and then it would come up again because I could see the dust clouds. So, like, I have to clean and aversive again. And then I would be cleaning with aversion. So at some point I was like, oh, this is actually really painful. Well, maybe I can let go of the aversion. And so, you know, we can, and then slowly but steadily I was letting go of the aversion more and more, and it became neutral and even sometimes pleasant. Like being mindful of the body while cleaning can actually be really pleasant, I found out. So this is a silly example, but this is how mindfulness can work for us. We can suddenly see what's actually happening here, and maybe it's not so helpful. And then it's not that it kind of magically disappears, but it gives us the chance to let go more and more, and to not that we do that, but wisdom does the letting go, slowly but steadily. And so these five faculties are interconnected. So this mindfulness is at the hub of it, and then the others are basically needed to be balanced. So the faith or the trust needs to be balanced with the wisdom aspect. Because if we have too much faith and not so much wisdom, then we might have more like blind faith, kind of blindly believe what is, you know, what someone else is saying or what the Buddha is saying. And that's not so helpful. We need a little bit of wisdom for ourselves to see that this is actually working. And so this might, if we're just starting out with our practice, then we might need a little bit of time to develop this, which is fine, of course, so that we can go beyond this blind faith. And then if we have too much wisdom, or a lot of wisdom, but only little faith or trust, then we might start to doubt. So this hindrance of doubt might come up, which is very useful to see as well. And we know that we might lack a little bit of wisdom, so we might want to kind of have this intention of cultivating more and more wisdom, and to cultivate getting insight into, to have this intention of wanting insight into whatever is happening. And I also have a whole talk on doubt on the website, part of the five hindrances, if you're interested, if that's something that comes up in your practice a lot, that might be useful to listen to. And then energy and concentration need to be balanced as well. So if there's too much energy and not enough concentration, then we have restlessness, like I just mentioned. And then we need to concentrate maybe a little better, a little more. Like maybe we start to focus on one thing more than we do this general mindfulness practice. And then if there's too much concentration and not enough energy, then there's more drowsiness and dullness, like I just described as well. So then we might want to generate energy by standing up, like I just said, or pulling our earlobes, or anything that could work for you. Sometimes, like I'm also mentioning in the other talk on sloth and torpor, is that that this drowsiness and dullness comes from aversion. So there might be an aversive undertone that we don't want to feel. We don't want to feel this feeling, and so it's basically the mind's response is to get drowsy and not feel anything. And so those are those five faculties, and they and their interconnectedness. And so we need to we need to develop all of them in our practice. It's a very useful list that we can use directly in our practice by looking at these balancing these things, and the mindfulness at the core can see what is happening. Mindfulness is aware of is there enough confidence, is there enough energy, enough concentration, enough wisdom, or does something need a bit more balance here and there? Where can I develop in my practice? What is lacking a little bit? Where can I put my attention more? And so I want to end with a quote from the meditation teacher Winnie Nazarko. One way to think about the faculties is that they are an intrinsic resource that can allow us to develop our understanding and our practice. They can be purposely developed to the point where they become powers of mind that can be drawn on at will.